This week, we have a special FiberTalk show about vision issues that may affect stitching. The show is sponsored by A&G's Cyber Pointers and by Sassy Jack Stitchery. Cyber Pointers is the only online chapter of the American Needlepoint Guild, and it's about to celebrate its 15th anniversary. Membership is open to all members of the National A&G organization. The meetings are conducted every other month and are run completely online. Cyber Pointers provides stitching opportunities through meeting programs and workshops. Upcoming meeting programs include Fantastic by Debbie Rowley, Desert Rose by Jeanette Tombaugh, Earth Spiral by Terry Bay, and Fibonacci Swirls by Olivia Hartshorn. The Fibonacci Swirls program will be led by chapter member Kathleen Brennan. There are also several workshops planned for the 2024-2025 calendar from national teachers Kathy Reese, Gail Stafford, Dawn Donnelly, and Tony Gertis. Join Cyber Pointers and learn all about these exciting programs and workshops at cyberpointers.org. Also sponsoring this week's show is Sassy Jack Stitchery. Now is the time to sign up for a series of October workshops with Jackie DePlessis, all held on consecutive days. The October 3 and 4 workshop is called Hold Dear, a beautifully decorated Tiger Maple Project Box with two storage areas and a pincushion in the lid. That's followed by Love That Red, a drawn thread sewing roll-up sampler on October 5 and 6. October 7 will be a bit of a mystery that will involve a fall flame stitch and a beautiful bespoke wooden box. Then, on October 8, you can stitch the Morning Glory Workbasket. Sign up for all of these workshops is by email only. Also, Kim is thinking about starting a linen club. Share your thoughts on the Sassy Jacks Facebook page. There are several additional events and activities on the horizon. Keep up with all of it through the Sassy Jacks website, sassyjackstitchery.com, the Jacks Journal newsletter, or the Sassy Jacks Facebook page. The new shop is opening soon, and the stitching opportunities are growing. Don't miss out. Thanks to Cyber Pointers and Sassy Jack Stitchery for sponsoring this special show about vision issues that may affect your needlework enjoyment. And now our conversation with Rinda Just and Kelly Lee Teske. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Special show this week. Our artists are needleworkers. Rinda Just, it's your fault that we're doing this show. So, Rinda, welcome.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah, actually, this show has come about. I'm sure Cindy Baldwin had a role in it, and then Nancy Holub from the A&G Cyber Pointers and Rinda, and got us all together to do this. So this show, and then our other guest is Kelly Lee Teske. Kelly, welcome.
Hey, hello. I'm excited to be here as well.
And glad to have both of you. Now, this show is going to be different because this show is about vision. And we're not just going to do a show about magnifiers and lights because, you know, we all get that. But what we're going to talk about is other issues. One of the big ones is macular degeneration, but other issues, floaters and dry eyes and those kinds of things. So we're going to go through with some detail about these various issues that affect stitchers and give what advice we can. But I do want to note right up front, none of us are doctors. Kelly is an optician. Not a doctor, an optician with many, many years, which means she knows as much as a doctor. She just doesn't have the piece of paper for it.
That's correct.
we're not here as medical experts at all. We're simply here to discuss the issues as they pertain to needleworkers. And if you want official information, that's where your eye doctor comes in, not us. Please don't hang it on us. But we've been wanting to do this for some time. Rinda was the catalyst for doing this, where we just talk about vision issues. Cause as we all get older, vision gets to be the biggest factor when it comes to stitching. And for younger stitchers, preventive measures, wearing sunglasses, taking eye vitamins, those kinds of things, doesn't hurt to start early and fend off some of these things. So just want to go through and deal with these things. This one will probably run a little long. The list is healthy of topics to talk about, but we just all feel that it's important that we have a thorough discussion about vision issues and needle workers, because without our eyes, it's really hard to stitch. So, so Rinda, I'm blaming it all on you, Rinda. So,
I've noticed that, Gary.
It's a good blame. Don't worry. So give us a little background on you as a needle worker and macular degeneration, just a short rundown of where you're at.
Sure. So I, like many people, I started stitching when I was, probably 15, and, did embroidery and then learned crewel and then went to law school and learned how to do counted cross stitch and then discovered counted canvas. And thank God that's where I ended up, because one of the things that we'll talk about later is that when you have macular degeneration and you have very low vision, it's almost impossible to work on painted canvas. The reason that Cyber Pointers looked at me was that I was the president of Cyber Pointers for 4 years. And so I know Nancy Holub and I know Cindy, and I know that Nancy was working on our outreach, and one of the things that they decided to do was to sponsor several of your shows. And Nancy and I are friends, and she immediately reached out to me and said, "Rinda, would you be willing to do this?" And I said, "Absolutely." I have had macular degeneration for a while. I can't even remember to tell you exactly when it started. My mother had it. She lived to be 97 and was almost completely blind. I knew that I was going to have it, and for years I took the eye vitamins that they recommended. Then I actually had significant vision loss in my right eye. I can't see. I have virtually no vision in my central right eye, and my left eye is only correctable now to about 20/60. So I haven't driven in 3 years, but I'm still stitching. And one of the things that makes me crazy is my guild used to do a lot of public stitching. And I can't tell you the thousands of times, literally, that women came up and said, "Oh, I used to do that, but since my eyes got bad, I just can't." And I'm like, "You drove here. You can read our sighing. Honey, you ain't got no problem at all compared to me. And if I can do it, you could do it. It's just that apparently it's not a priority for you. It is for me. It's kind of my passion. So losing my vision when I love stitching so much has been really hard."
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine.
Gary, is it okay if I interject something? Because when she said that, I think, because I was talking to one of our doctors this morning at work, and I think that's so important what she said, because a lot of people will either choose to work with it and live with it and do the best that you can, and then other people just choose to, let it overtake and kind of, determine what they're going to do. And part of it is just learning to live with it and looking past it. And I'm so in awe of Rinda for her that she's still stitching and is that passionate about it that she's willing to work around it. It's no joke. I don't have any of the issues that Rinda does. I just have floaters, but even that is tough.
I have utmost respect too, because I think I've told the story a couple times. Marga's mother had it and refused to. She just chose to feel sorry for herself, basically,
right?
And let it deteriorate. Wouldn't do anything. And then her aunt also got it, and she chose the other route. And to talk to her and work with her in a room, be with her in a room, you wouldn't even know she had macular degeneration. And then there sat Margaret's mother, just, "I can't see," blah, blah, blah. And so, it's a choice you make. And
absolutely. And, I have friends tell me all the time that they can't believe, they forget that I have it. I mean, I cannot tell you the number of times that people have tried to show me a picture on a phone. "Yeah, I can't see that." And, you know, I used to be a power stitcher and I could start a class at the beginning. I could finish it well, you know, within the class period. And my stitching was immaculate and I won tons of awards. But now I stitch just for me because I can't really tell, you know, if I'm doing the quality of stitching that I used to. And I'm really, really slow, but I still love it.
Yeah. Well, the slow part, I can match you on that. So don't worry about that. I can match you.
I'd be number three on that order.
Yeah.
Of slow stitchers.
Yeah, there's a club we can form pretty quickly, I think. Yep.
Right.
All right, now Kelly, you made the mistake on a stitch hour volunteering to help out with this show, so you got sucked in right away.
I know, Gary. I listened to you guys coming home because we're open till 7, and you start at 7. And so I'm driving, but as soon as I heard you talk about the show with Rinda when I was at a stoplight, I really quick just typed in, hey, if you have any, you know, if you need anything. And so I'm excited to be here. I've been an optician for 37 years, and a lot of people do get that mixed up with an optometrist, which is the actual doctor. But a good optician really knows what they're doing as far as knowledge of glasses, how they're made, what the lenses can do, and what a good fitting frame can do. So we will talk about all those, I think, as we go on, because those are all really important things. And but more importantly, I'm kind of a frustrated stitcher because that's really my passion. And working full time, I just don't seem like I have time to stitch, but I do fit it in on my lunch. At night, it's hard for me to stitch because the light gets in Jim's way and it bounces off the TV. So I can't, if I want to stitch, I have to go into another room all by myself.
Go to your room, Kelly.
Yeah, go to your room. So anyway, but I, like a lot of people, my grandma taught me how to stitch when I was probably 6 or 7. You know, I started out with making yo-yos, actually. So those are kind of my passion, yo-yos and a little bit of crochet and embroidery. And then actually when I was, and then I started quilting, I thought, oh, I'm going to make a quilt when I was married. And that was a disaster, but I did keep quilting. And then when I was pregnant with my daughter, I saw a sampler that was like an alphabet sampler. And it just, I thought, you know, I'm going to teach myself how to do that. And actually, the night that I had her, I was still stitching that sampler after she was born. And they had to do a blackout in the hospital. It was a scheduled blackout to do some kind of electrical work. And they came in and turned the lights off on me while I was stitching. I was so upset. But anyway, that's how I started cross stitching. And, you know, just kind of kept doing all of that. And of course, during the pandemic and COVID is when I caught onto Fiber Talk and all the other things and just kind of renewed my passion for cross stitch. So.
No, that's great. Yep. All right, let's get into this a little bit. Kelly, before we talk about macular degeneration, talk about the importance of seeing an eye doctor annually. And yes, you should go to a doctor where your eyes get dilated.
Yes. I will stress this point, Gary, because it's amazing to us all the time. Contact lens wearers, people who wear glasses. I mean, it's your eyes. It's what you use to see. It's everything, right, Rinda? Especially
Absolutely.
The position where you're losing your vision. And when they call and it's like been 3 or 4 years and they want to order contacts or get glasses, and we're like, what have you been doing for the last 5 years? You know, but a lot of people think it's just about the prescription when you come to the eye doctor. And so, and this will be different for Rinda, because someone who has a disease like that, they are going to be going to their ophthalmologist for follow-up care. Or an optometrist, they can test for those things, and then if you need to be referred on to, they'll refer you on to the ophthalmologist. But where an optometrist is so important is to have that annual exam, not only for your prescription to see if your prescription's changed, but for the actual health of your eye. So many things affect our eyes, you know, blood pressure, your diet, diabetes, and they can't tell unless you've been dilated. And a lot of people think that they can get by without being dilated. And it's just such an important part of it. Just such an important. So did I stress that enough, Gary?
Yeah.
Annual exam and be dilated. So even if I can say I've in the office I've worked at, our doctors, and this is the importance of a good doctor as well, they have seen things in the eye where they've reverted someone to their doctor and either caught a brain tumor or someone did end up being diabetic. I mean, there's so many health things that can show up in your eyes even before you know that you have it.
Yeah, that's so it's important. Yeah,
it really is. It really is. So
don't blow it off. Yeah, it's
exactly.
Yeah. All right, Rinda, let's deal with macular degeneration. And
yes.
give us your background and your story. And then, Kelly, if you just fill in where there's technical gaps so that we can get the full picture. Because, you know, it's I think for at least from my perspective, I think that people don't realize how many people have it, that it's not a rare thing or not necessarily rare. But and there's things you can do to stave it off, I guess, or at least be aware that it's happening. So. Take us through it, Rinda, what you dealt with.
Well, my mother, as I said, my mother had it. And so I knew that I was at risk. There is some component of it that's genetic, I think. And there is also, it's called age-related macular degeneration. It's also called geographical atrophy, because what is happening is that the macula, which is on the back of your retina and the back of your eye, it just kind of gets holes in it. And they start out being tiny, tiny, tiny little things, but then pretty soon more and more of them happen and the holes get bigger. And when there's a hole, you can't see it. You can't see that there's anything there. I can look at my hand and think that I'm missing two of my morning pills. And all I need to do is move my head and discover that, yes, in fact, they're there. And so people are always saying to me, well, you know, surely there's a treatment for that. Well, no, not really. There's two kinds of macular degeneration. There's dry, which is what I have currently. And then sometimes it becomes what they call wet, which means that the blood vessels behind your eye start to kind of expand and grow and further obscure your vision. Much better to have dry. When you get it wet, though, that's when you start getting those injections in your eye, which just sounds horrible to me, but my mother did it for years and lived. So,
okay, let's stop right there. 'Cause that was something I wanted to learn about from you guys.
Yeah.
Is I hear about those injections and I thought, oh good, they've found a solution.
Oh, no. All it does is slow it down.
Okay.
Nothing cures this at this point. And I don't think that it will until they figure out a way to do it with stem cells. Because once the stuff is gone, it's just gone. And unless you can rebuild it somehow cellularly, you know, it's probably not gonna be there. They now do actually have a drug that they can give you for dry macular degeneration. But the statistics on it sounded pretty horrible to me. It was like a 20% chance of slowing it down over a 2-year period, but a greater percentage chance of getting wet macular degeneration. I'm like, oh, hell no. So really the only thing that they can do for you when I got my diagnosis was I take AREDS, PreserVision AREDS, vitamins every day religiously, and that is the gold standard for treatment for dry macular degeneration. Mine went really fast once it really kind of became active, and it only took a couple of years before I lost most of the vision in my right eye. My left eye's been stable for 3 years, so that's good. I mean, I can function in the world. I just can't drive because I have to move my head around to see things that are just that were, you know, when you're driving, you know, like, you know that there's a traffic light up there somewhere. And usually, you know, when you have good vision, you just kind of raise your eyes a little and boom, there it is. And you can see it. Well, I have to like look around for it. And sometimes it takes a while to find it.
Yeah.
And so driving got, you know, got really scary. And I quit driving before I had to legally, just because in flat light, where there wasn't a lot of contrast, you know, like when it would snow, I didn't know where the edges of the road were. Mm. And so, you know, I just been dealing with it. And, you know, and it, like Kelly said, you know, I could have just curled up and died, but I just figure I got a lot of life left to live, and I want to do it the best I can. And you figure out ways to work around things, and you figure out things that will help you. And I've figured out a few of those in my life. Yeah. Most people will ask me, oh, you must use a huge magnifier. And I tell them, so what's zero times zero? yeah. Because you can't magnify what doesn't exist.
yeah. So, all right. So describe that experience as it progresses. And if I touch on things that are sensitive, let me know. But
heavens no.
Hey, Gary.
Yeah, go ahead.
Before we go too far, I was just going to interject too, so that you can know it's not, you don't have to have, like, it doesn't always occur both eyes, and one eye could be dry and one eye could be wet. So if you're experiencing something, again, we're just reiterating that there's things that they can catch earlier, you know, if you keep up on your annual exams.
Yeah.
So like Rinda, you said your right eye is worse.
Oh yeah. I have no central.
Yeah. Did your mom have it in both eyes?
Yes, she did. And yeah. Hers was wet in both eyes.
Oh,
and I have it in my left eye as well. It's just mm-hmm. not as bad. And it seems to have stabilized a bit. But 30 years ago, you know, my ophthalmologist said, you know, that would say when he was dictating notes to his assistant, you know, that there would be a slight, you know, I can't remember what the word he used was, but it was clear that he was talking about the macula. You know, mm-hmm. and just that there were signs of deterioration of the macula. And, you know, it was years before it actually started to affect my vision. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, when it did, it just got harder and harder to see things. And partly because I can see just fine where I can see.
Yeah.
But where I got a hole, you know, there's nothing that you can do about that. So,
and that's what I wanted to understand is it always central and then it spreads out, or is it spots across the field of vision?
Yeah. It's central, and it doesn't usually affect your peripheral vision, at least not in my experience. But it's really hard to learn how to use your peripheral vision. And I understand that there are people who actually can train you to do that. And I may have to go find one of them one day. My husband was taking pictures of me and he kept saying, why aren't you looking at the camera? I said, I am looking at the camera. And then he realized I was looking so that I could see the camera.
Oh.
So I had my head turned. So I'd look out the corner of my eye. I am really good at spotting movement out of the corner of my eye now. Can't see crap looking straight ahead. But boy, if a squirrel moves half a block away and I can see that in the periphery of my vision, I can see it.
So Rinda, my understanding is, you know, because there's low vision therapy centers and people that can work with you on that. So my understanding is that what you train yourself to do instead of looking – like if I'm looking at a yo-yo on a pillow now in front of me. So if I'm looking at that yo-yo, I'm not going to turn my head. I'm just going to shift my gaze over to the left a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it's actually going to be in my vision. So it's kind of like you want to look off.
Yeah.
To the side, but not actually turn your head.
Yeah. Well, and what I've discovered is I can do that. But then I can't make my finger go to where I, like if I'm trying to use my microwave, see the numbers looking at it. I can see it out of the peripheral vision, but then I can't make my finger go there.
Oh.
And so you turn your head to look right at it and it vanishes again, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I guess this is what I envision if anybody wants to try to see what that would even kind of be like is, you know, when you check to see which eye is your dominant eye and you do like a triangle and then you close one eye and you put something in the center of your triangle and then close one eye and something might still be centered in the other eye. It shoots off to one side.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's almost like if you're looking, that eye that's dominant is going to keep that in the center, but then it, the other eye, it's going to go off. So you're kind of seeing off.
Right.
So it's almost like you're not seeing with your dominant eye. That's my example. I don't know if that was a poor example or not. I was thinking if anybody's trying to visualize what that would be like, that's the only thing I can think of to even try to.
Yeah.
Well, you know, take a piece of paper and punch a hole in it, and you can see through the hole, and it's fine. You know, but pretty soon, if you put a lot of holes in it, then you can't see anything. You know, I mean, paint a picture on it and punch a hole in it, and you can still see the picture. But eventually, you know, you get enough holes in it, and you can't see it.
So this for you, Renda, then is a gradual thing. So it's
very gradual.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very gradual.
Oh, okay. And your bad eye, for lack of a better description, that one was the first place you noticed it, and then.
Oh no, I noticed it in. It was in both eyes. It's just that the right one deteriorated more quickly than the left one did.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
But you at least knew that there was potential for that because of family history then.
Oh, well, yeah. And like I said, because 30 years ago, my doctor said, you know, and he told me then that I should be on the vitamins and I should always wear sunglasses and I should wear a hat to shade my eyes and all of those kinds of things, all of which, you know, I've pretty faithfully done the rest of my life. But, you know, by that time I was in my early 40s or late 30s. And, you know, God knows how much, you know, UV exposure I'd had to my eyes before then, you know.
Yeah. Kelly, you and I were talking when we were prepping for this show, talking about, because when I was a kid, I mean, when we were all kids, you know, nobody wore sunglasses for anything. And,
right.
And these days there's such an awareness of the importance of wearing sunglasses. Is this, and these vitamins, is this something that you should start as young as an adult, as a child? What does the doctor recommend?
You know, the doctor on vitamins, I wouldn't know what to say as far as, you know, toddler or whatever. I would ask about that, especially even if there's history of something in your family, but definitely sunglasses. I was telling you, Gary, that even my grandkids started wearing sunglasses when they were babies, because they're finding that the most damage, you know, when you get older and you get cataracts or any of these other diseases, they found that the damage has been done early when we're younger, all that UV damage. So it's very important to protect your eyes. You know, from the very beginning, like if you see a baby going around with sunglasses on, you probably think, oh, that's cute. And the parents are trying to be real hip. Well, it's actually a really good thing that they're protecting that baby's eyes.
Yeah. And we were also talking cheap sunglasses versus quality ones. It's worth it to spend money on good sunglasses with good protection.
Absolutely. Well, you want to make sure that the UV protection is in there. Polarized glasses are wonderful. Now they're going to run a little bit more. So I don't know, you know, if you want to put the money into that for kids. But when you get a cheaper pair of sunglasses, the plastic isn't going to be optical quality. Sometimes there's a curve or a bend in that lens that can actually strain your eyes more because you're not looking through something that's optical quality for any other way to say it, you know, it can actually cause more strain.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, sunglasses for me, with my cycling where I'm out in the middle of nowhere for hours. And, somebody a long time ago said, you know, are you wearing sunglasses? And I never did. And then I started doing a little research and realized that, the exposure I was giving to my eyes for hours out in the sun was terrible. And so I wear sunglasses I wear them all the time, but especially when I'm cycling. I mean, they are just on, even on cloudy days.
Right.
Yeah.
And then this is kind of getting off track, but that made me think of that, Gary. Even, have you ever seen someone in the right in the corner of the, on the white of their eye, it almost looks like yellowish.
Yeah.
I was going to say like snot for lack of any other better word. Well, that's called pinguicula, and that is UV damage as well. So if you ever see that, that's what that is. So, really important. So, yeah, I was talking about plain sunglasses, but absolutely, if you have a prescription, and I'm sure we'll get into that more, really important.
Yeah. So, Rinda, as this progressed, what did this do to your needlework? Did a long while before it really became an issue, or?
Yeah, I was doing pretty well until my macular degeneration got pretty bad. And so I slowly kind of learned a few things, like all of a sudden, I'd have a project that I had worked on and I'd pull it out of my works in progress to work on it. And I go, I can't see that. Oh. And I tried, it took a while to figure out that there's two things that are absolutely critical for me to be able to stitch. Contrast is one of them, and light is the other. And macular degeneration is like, it's like a black hole in the middle of your eye. It's like it sucks in light. I mean, and what's more than enough light for most people is so dim for me that, so I have these just really intensely bright, very intense lights, and I have to have them below my eye and right above my canvas. And then the other thing is that I have to have contrast between my ground fabric and my threads. So, like I said, fortunately, I was never a painted canvas person. But about the time I really got interested in it, that was when I realized, oh, hell, I can't do that. Yeah. Because I can't have my thread in the background be the same color and see what I'm doing. I gave up black canvas fairly early in the process. And it was one of my favorite things to work on because everything looks so fabulous on black.
Right.
But I had to get rid of that. I'm working on 18 count and I'm doing just fine. With the help of my light, making sure that if I have to change the colors of the colors of the background for something, I do that. I mean, no more do I do, white, a single white thread on a white background. That would be just impossible. So I look for things that, I can either change the background color or that are designed in order to make it easier to see. And so those are kind of the two things that are important to me. The other thing that's helped me a lot is Kraft Optics. Mary Corbett had reviewed them at one point, and I contacted the company and talked at length with their optician. Kraft Optics they take your glasses, your prescription, and they build you a pair of titanium glasses with your prescription, but only with distance and close up. And then they mount these little binocular things on top that flip up and flip down. And there's something about them that helps you what I tell people is, what they tell you about your brain is that if you can't see something, if something is missing, like if there's part of a sentence missing, your brain fills in what it should be. And so when I'm looking at a piece of canvas, my brain is filling in where it thinks the squares should be. And sometimes they kind of, it's not double vision, but it's kind of like they overlap. And I've found that the Kraft Optics work really, really well to help you somehow narrow your field of vision so that you don't have that problem. And there's a little bit of magnification in there, which helps with the parts of my eye that still can see. So, those are the things I do. I kind of have to be in my magic place with my magic light, and make good selections about my projects, but I can still do it.
Yeah. Talk about the light. Now you say bright light. What does that mean? Yeah.
Well, so I used to use an alt light and I thought it was like the brightest thing I'd ever seen. Now I use a Stella light And I don't even know how many thousands of lumens that they are. I have five of them in my house, in my kitchen, in my stitching area. They're wonderful in that you can, they have ones that are live on rechargeable stands so that you can pick them up and take them with you, and they'll have 10 or 12 hours of charge, and they're just as bright. They also, they have white light and, warm light and cool light. So you can change, and you can change the intensity of the light and the color of the light. They have a brand new one that just came out that I have not yet seen and I'm really curious about, that's called Red, Green, Blue. And what it does is it allows you to program in all of the colors of the spectrum, because apparently some colors help people see more clearly. And I know that I went to the low vision clinic at the Idaho Commission for the Blind to see if they could help me with a prescription. And he was able to, with polarized purple lenses, was able to give me like one more line on the eye chart. But the problem with polarized lenses in everyday life is you can't look at a screen. Yeah, you can't look at an iPad. And if you're driving a Tesla, you wouldn't be able to see your dashboard.
Oops.
I found those not to be particularly useful except for watching TV and sometimes for trying to read magazines. Most magazines I have to read the read line because I can enlarge them. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things. But I love my Stella Light, and they're just really useful and very helpful, and they're kind of expensive, but they are worth every penny for me. I go into rooms.
So your Stella lights then are not just for stitching. They're a tool you use all through the house.
Crafters, they're task lamps. They're for crafters. It's one of those things they specifically talk about, you know, that they're particularly useful for people with low vision, but they persist in putting white type in a yellow background on their website, despite my repeated complaints to the management. They really do help. If illumination is a problem, if you have trouble seeing in anything in dim light, then, you know, it's worth checking them out. And they've got floor lamps and desk lamps and clamp lamps that clamp onto the edge of a table, and the Go Light, which is the one that sits and recharges, and then you can carry the light around. That's what I take to my stitching group on Thursdays so that I stitch there as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, Kelly, give us from the doctor's office perspective then, if there's a history or someone as the early stages, what kind of advice do you give in terms of the vitamins and other things that people can do to prevent, slow down, help out, whatever?
Well, besides the Ocuvite that we already talked about and keeping up with your exams, because if there's something that runs in your family like that, like Brenda, did they give you the Amsler grid
But I've never really found it helpful.
Oh, not even at the beginning to monitor your changes.
My mom used one, but I don't.
Yeah. Okay. And Gary, you can't say enough about just health, like no smoking, diabetes. Try to keep your body in shape, and all those things will affect your eyes.
Yeah,
especially smoking, and if you have your blood sugars high, or you know, high blood pressure, cholesterol, all of that. So,
man, I hate that. You got to be healthy all the time. Darn it!
all the time. Exactly.
It's not that hard, Gary.
Oh, I work at it all the time.
Hey, Rhonda, I had a question for Rhonda. I'm curious. How do you thread your needle then?
Oh, you know what? Threading my needle is no problem at all.
Really?
Yeah. I've been threading needles for years. Now, I never could thread a beading needle, and I haven't tried lately, but I've discovered that there's a beading needle that is actually split all the way. It's just two fine wires split all the way down, and I can do that. I don't have that much trouble. I've had trouble lately separating my threads. to lay them properly. It just takes me a long time to do it. Because trying to get them lined up and seeing a single thread is a bit of a challenge. And so trying to get them pulled out and lined up and flattened out. But I generally don't have trouble with that. I do occasionally use a needle threader, but I just use the kind that has the big hole and the little hole that goes through your needle.
Right. So when you have macular degeneration, patience is a virtue.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, and hopefully if you're a needle pointer or a cross stitcher, you've learned patience.
Right.
Yeah.
So it also helps to get over that perfectionistic tendency that some of us have. You get to the point where you realize that there are mistakes you can live with and mistakes you can't.
Well, doesn't that make it more fun?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Now, what have you had to sacrifice much, Rinda, in terms of ground cloth thread density?
Well, just mostly avoiding black and trying to make sure that I am not using pale blue thread on pale blue, canvas, that kind of thing. The more threads you have, the easier it is. So certainly stitching with silk and ivory or vineyard silk or pearl cotton or something like that is certainly easier than dealing with 12-stranded silk, but only in the sense of, having to get it stranded and put back together and all that kind of stuff. If the design calls for very light coverage, one strand in a background, that's real hard unless it's really a contrasty color. Oh. And that just usually isn't the case for backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Kelly, tell us about this Amsler chart, because I remember that was when Margaret's mother was first diagnosed, that she was sent home with an Amsler chart. And if you go to, I dug up some links for people, the American Macular Degeneration Foundation, there's a place to download a chart. What is the purpose behind that?
Well, it'll kind of just look like maybe even a cross stitch graph chart.
And yeah, there's exactly.
A dot in the middle. And what they'll do is have you either, it's kind of a way, almost like taking your blood pressure at home, kind of a way to monitor yourself at home to see if your vision is changing or if you have any changes. And maybe if there's more of a sudden change, let your doctor know. But you'll focus on that. And then I think I sent you an image, Gary, where it will actually show kind of different images that you might see. And basically some of the lines, instead of looking like a grid, they might either be blacked out or they might look wavy, just kind of some different things that you can help monitor. So if you know that, last week when I looked at this up to the right, those lines were wavy, but now, the bottom's wavy too. You could kind of monitor yourself to see where those changes. But like you said, Rinda said she didn't use it.
Yeah.
Rinda, when you were, how often did your doctor have you go in? Was it every six months or?
No, just yearly.
Yearly?
But always with the caveat, if you see a sudden change, generally nothing has happened suddenly with this disease for me. It's just all creeping slowly.
Yeah.
So, but if I woke up one day and, couldn't see out of my left eye, I'd be in that same day. So.
Right. And, I think a lot of people are afraid of, just having their eyes touched, or when you guys were talking about the injections before, I could just see a lot of people wince. But just to let them know that when you're doing things like that, there are drops, and some people don't like any drops at all, but there are drops that they use to numb your eye when they're doing certain things. So it isn't like they're just going to jab you with a big syringe and you're going to, go shooting out of the seat. So I guess what I want to say is don't be afraid. You're better off going in and finding out and trying to treat it right away than just ignoring it or avoiding it because you're afraid.
Yeah, one of my favorite comedians, Kathleen Madigan, does a whole bit on going to the eye doctor and having the puff of air shot at your eye for cataract makes such a big deal of it. And you know, it really, you just, none of that stuff lasts long. Like when you get your eyes dilated, for me, that's just a good excuse to take a long nap in the afternoon while it wears off. But I mean, you just gotta suck it up and do that because it's your eyes and you need to have those things examined.
And Gary, I hear so many sob stories. Oh, I can't be dilated. I have to go back to work. And I'm like, I don't care. Right. I get dilated and I have to keep working.
Yeah.
So, you know, no sob stories here.
No, it's like Rinda, people who say, I can't see, I don't want to hear about it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, work it out. Yep.
Right.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's get the vitamin part. So like Marga and I take Ocuvite. But then, Kelly, you had another brand that you take.
Are you talking about the drops for dry eyes, Gary?
No, I'm talking about the AREDS.
The AREDS.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's PreserVision AREDS, AREDS, and then the Roman numeral 2.
Right.
Correct.
All right. And so those are the ones. And do we take both of them? Do we take one or the other?
Well, the Ocuvite is going to be more prevention and, you know, the healthier eye. The AREDS is after you have macular degeneration.
Okay. So that, Rinda, so that's normal. That's every day for you then, Rinda, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, it doesn't make things better. Nothing, like I said, nothing makes it go away. It just tries to slow it down.
Yeah.
They always tell you, you know, if you have macular degeneration, you'll never be completely blind. But they also don't expect you to live to 102, you know. So, you know, it gets pretty dicey the older you get.
Okay, well, that's interesting because I thought you eventually just lost vision altogether.
But no.
So you don't do that. It just gets the periphery more limited then.
Yeah, my mother would come to my house. And, you know, she couldn't see anything. And she'd complain about the dust on top of my medicine cabinet. And I'm like, what the hell? How can you even see that?
Yeah.
I would be, it would like with your mother-in-law, it was weird, the things that she could see, you know, and that you'd never, you know, like, really, you saw that?
Yeah.
But it's amazing what you can see out of the corner of your eye when you're not even trying.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. You know, and that was another thing that hit a little nerve when you were talking, Rinda, mentioning about going to places for low vision or for people who are blind. And I remember when Marga's mother and we were helping her initially. Well, Marga was doing most of the work; I wasn't. But you start having to deal with people who deal with blindness and that, you know, that is kind of, I don't know, I don't want to, if it's a fear or whatever it is, but to start to deal in that realm of vision kind of, at least for me, and it didn't affect me at all personally, but it just kind of made me sit up and think, whoa, wait a minute, we're headed down that path, but that's where the help is at. So that you can continue to see and adapt better.
Yeah, and but at least in Idaho, I found those services to be pretty limited. Okay. I mean, like, what I needed was somebody to come help me figure out, like, how to mark my microwave so I could use it, how to make my stove so that I could use it. I wasn't getting any of that because. That's just kind of not what they do. I mean, they can try to give you glasses that work a little better in the low vision clinic here and, you know, and recommend a magnifier that works best. But that was about all they did. And it, you know, it, the thing is, it's very different to have low vision and be blind. And on my last visit to my eye doctor, I visited three floors in the facility before I hit the right one because I can't see the freaking buttons in the elevator. And I could if they were lit up white on a black background, but they're dark red on a black background. And I went to the front desk and I said, you know, your patients with low vision probably can't see how to run the elevator. And they said, well, it's got Braille on it. And I'm like, well, that's all fine and good if you're completely and totally blind. But if you're not and you don't use Braille, you know, it's until you've been in this spot, you do not realize how lucky you are to have good vision. And people who, when I tell people, I can't see that, they're like, well, what do you mean you can't see that? I'm like, well, it's dark red on black. That's low contrast. Yeah. I can't see that. Yeah. And they're like, oh. And when I use the thing about white type on a yellow background, most people, even with vision, say, oh my God, yes, I hate that. Well, you know, that is one of the worst things. And I fight that all the time on websites. Pale gray on white, yellow with white lettering, dark blue or blue background with black lettering, all that low contrast stuff makes things very, very difficult to deal with. For yeah. people with low vision.
There's a reason they print books with black ink on white paper.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. If they printed them with white lettering on a yellow page, I don't think any of us would ever look at it.
Yeah. Yep. Always have and always will. It's the only way to read.
Well, and I think it's baffling to me because I now have to read the newspapers online. And yet, even though they're not actually spending money for ink, they're still not using black type.
Right.
they're using like light gray type.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, that's very true. Yeah. Yeah. You know, people don't realize it may look cool to people who have full vision, but it's not functional. Yep.
Yeah. 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 If you're trying to get a message across, it would be helpful if the people could actually read it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No, in the magazine business, that every time we look at redesigning the magazine, the bulk of the work is figuring out what fonts at what size will be readable to the most people. And yeah, it's always a challenge. And
you got
to make the effort, because if your people don't have to read the material, they won't. And
yeah. And, you know, when you and I prepared for this, one of the things I said was, you know, like I had to quit subscribing to some magazines that I loved, and I could read the type, but I couldn't read the headlines because they'd be pale or they'd be all curlicued and with little tendrils here and there. And I would actually have to put my finger on the letter and try to trace it and keep in my head what letters I was tracing to see what they said. And unfortunately, needle pointers and Needlepoint Now have the same issues. They use types that are very difficult to read. They use colors, combinations that are very difficult to read. And in fact, some charts, you know, any chart that has a yellow, if they're using a yellow line on a white chart, that's really hard to see. Designers and magazine editors that want to make sure that we all keep stitching for a very long time really need to get made aware of this. And I'm hoping that this is one of the ways that that might happen.
Yeah. Well, I will say that when we talked before here a couple of weeks ago, it was just before we put together the magazine that I edit the next issue. And it really raised my awareness of what we were doing with headlines and decks. Mm-hmm. You know, can they be read? And we're going to be working on that a little bit because, the artist is doing her job. She's making it look pretty, but it's not functional. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And there are programs out there that will test the it's sort of a part of the universal accessibility stuff. For websites and communications and things like that, there are programs that you can run that your document through that will tell you if you have accessibility problems for vision on them. But nobody seems to be aware of them, especially website designers.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Kelly, then you have your own issues. I mean, you do this stuff for a living, but you have your own issues with dry eyes and floaters. And what's that all like?
Well, which one do you want to talk about first, Gary?
Try dry eyes.
Dry eyes. Okay. Well, after hearing Rinda talk about her, you know, not even being able to see, these seem like nothing, but they are real issues that a lot of people do struggle with. So as far as the dry eyes go, you do have tear glands in your upper lid and then underneath as well. Dry eyes you can get from a couple different things. One could be that your glands aren't producing enough tears, or the fact that your tears are just drying up too fast. And some of that could be your blink rate. I mean, there's a lot of different things that could contribute to dry eyes. Contact lens wearers might experience it. You know, if you have allergies, if you're in the wind, you know, just all kinds of different things. So I could just chatter on, Gary. So why don't you kind of guide me through?
No, that's fine. So what does dry eye mean? Does it just mean that there's just not enough fluid on the eye and so it kind of burns?
It will burn. It will itch. They can be red.
Okay.
So then it's kind of strange because when you have dry eyes, your eyes will tear more excessively because it's trying to correct itself. Oh. So with dry eyes, a lot of people, like as we sit here, my left eye is filling up and tears will just like stream down sometimes. And then that's, you know, if you can imagine trying to look through tears, that makes it blurry. And then if you're dabbing at your eyes all the time with a tissue or Kleenex, that's going to dry your eye out. So there's just it. The only thing you can really do, there are some preventions as far as, I'm really bad about this because at work I get really, really hot. So I have a little fan, a little dust fan on me all the time, but that dries my eyes out. So, you know, I might have to have the fan on me, but tip it down. You know, if you're in the car with heat or air. So if you're in an environment where it's dry, you know, if you use a humidifier, that will help. So yeah, it's just it's what you think, your eyes drying up and just being kind of parched.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, even staying hydrated, you know, with water. And then of course, and then we'll talk about the drops, but
yeah, well, you know, tell us about the drops. 'Cause I'm curious about that. Yeah.
So drops. Now I will say can I say a brand name or can I not, Gary?
Well, you can, as long as you're not trashing them.
No. Okay. Bausch & Lomb has
The last Fiber Talk show, we're going to trash everything we wanted to trash all the years.
So, well, you know, for years people would get confused. I mean, Visine. Okay. Visine's going to get the red out. It is not going to lubricate your eye or help with the dryness. But there is a new drop out by Bausch & Lomb that's called Lumify, and it has been a saving grace for me because my eyes, by the time I get to work, are so red and itchy. It's almost like I can't even concentrate, Gary. That's how overwhelming it feels and it looks, because everything's even blurrier, you know, just the feeling of, you know, I can't do anything until I get those drops in my eyes. So the Lumify gets that red out and it just soothes it. Now it's not going to last like a rewetting drop does. So when I get to work in the morning, I'll put in the Lumify and that helps. And probably like an hour later, about 3 or 4 times during the day, I'll put in another drop. And the one I use is Sustain. There's a couple different Sustain. One is a little bit more clear. The newer one, it's a little bit thicker. It has more of a milky look to it. So some people don't like to use it because it is milkier, so it kind of clouds your vision when you first put it in. You know, you have to let it soak in.
Okay.
But making sure Restasis, which is, you know, it's going to be pricier. You need a prescription for that. But there are over-the-counter drops that do help. You just have to be consistent and not lazy and make sure that you use them.
So these rewetting drops then have a little viscosity to them, so there's some staying power.
They do. Okay. They do. So, and then too, like when you put in your drops, well, make sure your hands are clean, for one thing. A lot of people don't.
We got to wash our hands for another reason. Come on.
Yes. But too, when you put your drops in, it's helpful if you keep your head tipped back a little bit, and then even kind of pinch in where your tear ducts are. And keep your eyes closed for a minute and let those drops really soak in. If you put them in and just like sit up right away, most of that's just going to drain right out, you know, and you're starting to dab that out. So kind of just relax for a few minutes after you get your drops and let them soak in.
Okay.
Kind of a power nap.
Exactly.
I'm going to start a list of reasons to take a nap. That's
Gary. Whenever somebody wants you to do something, you just say, "I can't right now. I'm putting my drops in. Yeah. I need to put my drops in."
Yeah, I'll be back to you in an hour. Yeah,
I'm liking
this.
Yeah.
All right. And then, so now you have floaters or something. I think all of us run into from time to time. But
Oh, can we go back to dry ice for a minute?
No, we're done with that. That's it.
We are. No, because this has to do with stitching, so we have to go back.
Yes.
Well, and okay, I will get to stitching, but of course, avoid smoking. And you really want to make sure you're getting all those omega-3s and the good fats and vitamin A. All that stuff does make a difference for your eyes and your vision. So I just wanted to say that. And then if you are stitching, or if you are even on a computer, something like that, especially since we're talking about stitching, you know, make sure that you're blinking enough and giving your eyes a rest in between. Because think about it, if you're just like staring at a chart, you know, counting, and then you're looking down at your cloth and you're counting and you're trying to get, you know, you're not blinking as much as you usually do, and your eyes are going to dry out. So just make sure that you're looking up and away and blinking.
Yeah. Okay. Rinda, do you deal with do you have that dry eyes on top of it, or
no. I don't. I was a contact wearer for many, many, many years, and I was always told I was an inadequate blinker.
Is that on your permanent record?
Inadequate blinker? I think so. But one day I realized that with readers, I could see up close, and without them, I could see distance, but I could not see anything in the middle and my contacts. And so that was when I was about 2015. I said, okay, I guess I'm going full time to glasses, and I haven't had a problem since. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. All right. Floaters.
Oh, floaters. That's my baby, Gary. So, well, floaters, they're a beast of their own. I think a lot of people have experienced maybe the little black specks, or, you know, if you're in bright sun or looking, you might see something go by and think it was a bug or a fly or something. And those are very common and normal. I hate to say it, aging. If you're really high prescription as far as nearsighted, you're more prone to floaters. And unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about them. There's just nothing you can do about them. Most of the time, they're just floating around in the like vitreous gel inside your eye. So they'll float around. That's why they call them floaters. So sometimes they might be in your vision and sometimes they won't be. Now, I've had those, but now I have one that's more permanent, and it's right center. And I say it looks like a stink bug. That's exactly what it looks like. It's not black and little like the others. It's a big brown square, and it's just center left of my central vision. And the only thing I can do is make sure that I'm either, you know, I'm blinking and looking up, especially if I'm stitching. It's almost like I have to look up and out, like as far out in the distance, almost like I want to look at a sunset or look, it's almost looking past it. So it kind of reminded me of when Rinda was talking about, you know, you have to train yourself to look kind of in a different place, you know, with the macular degeneration. If you have a permanent floater like that, that doesn't move around, it's kind of the same thing. You just kind of have to learn how to look around it. And sometimes it's actually just kind of looking past it, you know? Mm. So like, I'll notice a lot more when I'm stitching or when I'm on my computer, you know, and then certain lighting will make it worse too. But, well, isn't this something? This is the only good thing about aging. The ophthalmologist told me that as I age, the gel in my eye will thin out, and then that floater will actually drop. And then it won't be in my central vision. I'm like, oh, there is something good about aging. The vitreous fluid's going to thin out. You know, floaters are, I will say this, floaters are common. But if you have sudden floaters, or if you have a floater that's combined with a flash of light, that is something that you want to see your doctor. You want to call your eye doctor right away.
Okay.
Because there are, you know, that could be a retinal detachment. Retinal detachment, you can also have floaters left from that. You can have floaters from an injury, you know. And it doesn't, you're probably more likely to get them when you're older, but we've seen kids that were maybe specifically one I remember, he was hit in the eye with a ball and he was only like, I think 11 years old. And he ended up with a retinal detachment and then had floaters, you know, continual floaters after that. So There's different ways that you can get floaters. And again, if you're nearsighted and have a high prescription, that's another good reason to see your eye doctor and be dilated, because those are things they're looking for, is that membrane to see how thin it is, and they'll be able to see if you have floaters.
Okay.
You know, especially if you get, if once you're dilated and then you get your photos taken. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever had your photos taken and then got to see them?
Photos?
Photos of the... of the inside back of your eye.
Oh, no, no.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't make that clear.
I have. It's
picture
fascinating.
Of what? It is fascinating. It's fascinating. It is fascinating. Yeah. So yeah.
I would have loved to have seen that, what that looked like.
Yeah. Well, and even for me, I mean, not that it's fun, but it is kind of cool, because and that's one reason they might want to take a photo every year. If you have something going on, like you can actually see from one year where I didn't have the floater to the next year where I did. And it's just a big black spot, you know, right on the inside of my eye. And then they can also look for hemorrhages, you know, leakages, healthy veins, all kinds of things. But that's about all I have to say for floaters. Okay. I should probably name mine, because now it's my buddy.
Sounds like it.
Well,
he goes with me everywhere.
So Kelly, aren't you glad that we call them floaters for a reason and not stabbies?
Yes. Yeah. So.
Well, here's hoping that you're looking, your eyes are open the day it gets thin enough that it falls to the bottom, and you get to celebrate as it falls to the bottom.
Well, but right now it's to my benefit, because anything that happens at work, I can either say, oh, I can't do that, you know, my floater's in the way, or, you know.
Yep.
Well, this is, oh, Rinda, you might think this is funny or not, but this was, do you want to hear a true story?
Sure.
We have this big glass cabinet at work that we have some special frames in it. It's all lit up blue and it looks real special. And there's just this little key in it. We don't really, it's not really locked. You know, you just turn the key. Anyway, I was walking past it one day and I told him, I walked right smack into the glass cabinet and I bent the key. Oh, I ran into it and I bent the key and they're like, what are you doing? I was like, seriously, my floater, I couldn't see where I was going. So now whenever a patient goes to open up that cabinet and they're like, why is the key bent? me and my floater get the blame for it.
Jeez. All right, here, let's get down to the end here. Talk about glasses and lenses, because I had the glasses I'm using right now, they just haven't really been right, and I got them from an eye doctor thing, you know, not a quick and dirty, cheap thing. I mean, I paid good money for them, and they were never right. And when we moved to St. Louis, the eye doctor that we go to here, I said, you know, can you adjust these things so that, you know, they can be better? She said, well, the lenses aren't made right. And she knew it immediately. And, you know, it kind of frustrated me, because it was the guy who makes the lenses right there in the eye doctor office. And, but this whole eyeglass thing is a rather important thing. I mean, obviously it's important so you can see, but, having them done right is worth the effort.
Well, I might get on a bandwagon about this, Gary. So if I'm getting too far, you stop me at any point.
Kelly, before you get on your bandwagon, I don't have a lot to say about that, except that one of the very first things that I did when my vision started to go was that I had my eye doctor increase the close-up portion of my prescription by about a point. Just that way, I didn't have to have a special pair of glasses for stitching. I mean, I know that out there on the stitching websites, you know, there's directions on how to have an optometrist or have an optician make you reading or stitching glasses. But my doctor just basically, he just added it into my prescription. And so once I gave up the contacts, you know, I didn't have to have stronger glasses in order to be able to stitch, and it was really nice. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's one thing that you can do. And then before you get to the point where if you're still wearing contacts, I mean, a pair of readers will do an amazing job of helping you stitch. But apparently a lot of people never think about that. And I mean, I lived on inexpensive readers for years, you know, one and then two and then three and then four, you know, and then, you know, then we went to something else. But don't devalue the possibility that adding readers to your contacts can make stitching so much easier. And then if you end up wearing glasses all the time, you know, they can make them so that you don't have to have a special pair for stitching.
Yeah. Well, should we talk about readers since that's where you were at?
Well, you can be on your bandwagon now. So,
okay,
buckle up.
Buckle up. I'll go along with the readers right now because there is a need, and believe me, I ordered a pack of plus threes for $5 off of Amazon just so I'd have one in every room. But we'll kind of go back to what I said about sunglasses. Those readers that you buy over the counter aren't going to be the optical quality. And they're certainly not going to have what we think is so important as the non-glare and anti-reflective on them. But Gary, I did have a good website that I don't know if I sent you. It's called iBobs.com. And they are more expensive readers, but they are going to be a good optical quality lens. And they do have the non-glare on there. So as far as the readers go, so I don't know if I want to jump back to it because you said wearing over your contacts, Rinda.
Well, that's what I had when I got, to an age where I had presbyopia, right. Then I couldn't read or stitch without having readers.
So I guess it depends on your prescription because I know Beth wears her readers over her glasses because we see her on Fiber Talk. And yep. I love to watch her do that. But I was even telling you, Gary, I think if Beth had a non-glare on that, I don't know if she gets fatigue. I'm just using Beth as an example. But, you could have more fatigue or it's just not right for your prescription. And again, Gary, I think you and I were talking, we were both horrified when somebody on one of your shows said that they took linen into their doctor or they asked their eye doctor to help them. And they told them they wouldn't do that. And I was just horrified. I was like, oh my gosh, find a different doctor. But if you bring your linen, your charts in, whatever you sew, bring that in with you and show the doctor what size you're trying to look at. They can help you figure that out. Now, to go along that, sometimes what you and Rinda, I know you said you had yours made stronger, but depending on if you're in a progressive, an O-line bifocal, or if you're in aligned trifocal or bifocal, is going to make a difference for your power as far as stitching and where you're looking.
Right, and they took that. That's exactly what they did.
Right,
they were progressives, and it was right where I was looking.
So, I kind of lost my train of thought. I don't know what I was going to say, but so let's go back to just readers only. Let's just say you have a plus three, but in my prescription, so if I think I'm at home, I'm going to put on those plus threes and stitch, for a couple hours, I might get more strain and more fatigue because I really have some correction for astigmatism, which should be in my reading prescription as well, not just for my distance. So that correction for astigmatism, it's almost like fine tuning Oh, you know, back in the day when you had to get up and turn the channel on the TV.
Yeah.
And you know, you had that secondary knob, so you'd get something in and then turn that secondary knob to get it crisper. That correction for astigmatism is going to be that secondary knob getting that crisper. So if you're wearing just a plus three lens, but you really need correction for astigmatism, you might be able to see it magnified, but it's not giving you really good crisp vision because that's not actually your prescription. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's how important it is. I mean, I know. So again, Gary, you and I were talking, I'm going to put good glasses as for stitching underrated because, because it's huge, you know, it's huge. And I know a lot of people say, well, I can't afford it, or it's too expensive, but there are ways that you can get it. So if you like, for myself, and I work in an eye doctor, so believe me, I know even with my discount, I can't afford the glasses that I want all the time. But I ended up doing a lined trifocal for my stitching. And I tried a couple different things. I don't stitch well with my progressives. I don't stitch well with readers over my progressives. I tried a lined bifocal. So, and I guess it depends on if you watch TV and do other things while you stitch. But that lined trifocal lets me relax my eyes and look up and out with my prescription. I can look through the middle and see the chart at arm's length. And then I have that bottom part that's for my stitching that's up closer. Now, my trifocal that I wear for stitching is stronger in the bottom than my progressive that I wear every day because I don't need that high of an add when I'm just, you know, writing or reading, but I do when I'm stitching.
Why lined? What is the line?
Well, the line gives you those three definite areas. So you have a bigger block section of like looking at intermediate or your reading, where in the progressive, you have those little tiny graduations of sweet spots.
Oh, okay.
You know, so if you move your head a little bit, you might get out of your sweet spot for where you're looking. And I'm just saying that I find that to be really beneficial. And a trifocal is a lot less expensive than a progressive lens.
All right. So, okay, I'm going to ask a personal, I'm going to do the thing that I always hate in groups, which is, you know, my own personal situation, which has nothing to do with anyone else, but I'm going to ask the question.
Okay.
So, like, my glasses, I've learned, were not made right, and they're progressives. So I'm going to get new glasses and have them made right. But then that suggests to me that for stitching and close-up work, then I should have a second set of pair of glasses that are line trifocals.
Well, I'm not telling you to do a line trifocal, but Gary, I think you would like it.
Okay,
I'm telling you, I think you would like it. Well, that's like any, even, you know, if you think, you know, task, you know, if you have the right tool for, I was going to go to the guy thing, like whatever tools you need for your bike, Gary, you know, it, you know, the, if you have a cheaper tire pump than one that is compatible and you can take with you, I don't know, whatever analogy you want to use. But, you know, a progressive lens isn't going to give you everything that you want. You know, somebody who's on the computer all day and you're tipping your head back, you know, your neck is going to ache. You're not, you know, if you can just envision these graduated powers looking from out to your reading, you're just not going to get everything that you want when you're doing a specific job. Those are for like everyday going through life where, you know, where I can see far, I can see, you know, the cookbook and I can see this. If you're doing a task like stitching, I highly, highly recommend, especially if it's something you're passionate about and that you love doing, having a special pair of glasses for that.
And that would be
made just for that.
And that would be line trifocals then.
Well, for our age group, Gary, I would say yes. Gary, if we live close to each other, I would do a line trifocal for you, and I would have you coming in there telling me how much you love me because you are like stitching like a fiend. You'd be like, Kelly, I can see across the room, I can see my chart, and I can see up close to stitch.
Well, it's so interesting because, you know, the perception is that continuous is the more advanced lens.
Well, it is, and that's what I'm saying. That is, and it is for everyday
but
wear.
For tasks,
I mean,
you need those defined fields,
right.
Then.
Right. I mean, a progressive is going to give you the most natural line of vision for our daily walking around. But if you want, Gary, I'm telling you, if you try a trifocal and you like it, you better let me know.
Okay.
And you can't have it measured too low. Otherwise, you're going to be fighting to get into those areas that you need. You need to have it measured up where it needs to be.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
You know, and there is a cost for it, yes. But when you pay for good lenses, and that kind of takes us off on me onto a tangent of a private office and an optician versus like a chain store. And I mean, I'm not going to generalize it because there are good doctors in there and there's good opticians, but most of those people are trained more as salespeople, I would say, than an actual. And I say that with confidence because we have a lot of people. And again, I've been doing this for 37 years. A lot of people take their prescriptions, which is fine. We'd love for you to do that. There's a need for people to be able to buy, you know, something less expensive online or at one of those places. But I cannot tell you how many times they come in. And Gary, I'd be curious to know what was wrong with yours, but these are not made right. You know, they don't have the measurements they need. You know, it's turned in the frame wrong and it's not lined up properly. The adjustment's not right, even to a bad fitting frame. All those things are so important.
Yeah.
So Gary, when they say yours weren't made right, were they talking about the lens itself?
Yeah, the lady who looked at them, she said vertically the progressive was not done right.
Oh, okay, that's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, that's where, you know, you need to make sure that all those measurements are really important.
And then see, she bent and adjusted the nose pieces, mm-hmm. and she was able to make it much better. But still not quite right. And I, you know, I didn't go to a chain. I mean, I got them from the guy at the eye doctor and he made the measurements, but I don't recall him ever doing any vertical measurement. It's always, you know, it was side to side, but, anyway, it's they weren't made right. So,
well, I guess you'll have to come and see me next time you're getting your glasses, Gary, okay. And we'll make sure it's done right.
All right, I'll get on a plane.
Yeah. Okay. You're not that far away, are you?
No, I'm not. St. Louis.
I can drive it.
I can get to Wisconsin. Not a problem.
So, okay, that was kind of my bandwagon on the glasses.
Okay. And that, you know, and then that, let's just wrap up with the other things is, taking breaks and would you, Kelly wants you to drink wine, but that's another subject.
Yeah, I do. But, that is another subject. Yeah,
but when you're stitching, posture, stretching, moving your head, getting up, moving around, changing what you're staring at, you know, all those normal things that come up all the time.
Right.
They aren't just hot air. They mean something.
Right. Right. Blinking, you know, taking a break, looking up, looking out at a distance. And I mean, even farther than your TV, look like across the room, you know,
snoop on your neighbors.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to be enough. That's thanks ladies. Yeah. That was just fantastic.
Yeah. Thanks Gary. That was so much fun. Rinda, I'm so glad to have met you.
Oh, me too, to have met you, Kelly. Yeah, and like I said, if I find out you were in Boise and you didn't reach out, I'll be really mad.
Okay, no. you and me and Cece will get it together.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, ladies, and thanks to everyone for listening.
Thank you, Gary. Yep. Thank you. Thanks, Gary.